when we talk about economic activity in the United States and around the world, we tend to look at things where money changes hands. Someone gets paid for goods or services.
But our next guest says there's another huge part of the economy hidden in plain sight. It's the world of unpaid work. Things like childcare, senior care, household maintenance, and more, often done by women. And she says when we overlook that kind of labor, we miss an important part of the way the world works and come up with misguided policies as a result.
Elizabeth Weingarten joins us now. She's director of the Global Gender Parity Initiative and senior fellow in the Better Life Lab at New America. Elizabeth, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be on.
Well, what are we talking about when we talk about unpaid work?
So, you know, that is actually one of the most difficult questions to answer. It seems like it should be simple. But in fact, we did some research earlier this year with Politico Focus, and we found that even experts, people who are supposed to know all about unpaid work, all had very different definitions for what they thought unpaid work was. The kind of basic definition that we tend to go with, kind of loosely defined, unpaid work is any type of activity or service that has a value in the marketplace. So, for example, spending time caring for your infant or taking care of an elderly family member, we would consider that to be unpaid work because technically you can pay a third party to do it. Of course, the problem is that a lot of people don't have that choice. But there's kind of an interesting way that one economist has described the distinction that we make between paid work and unpaid work, which is a country's GDP falls when a man marries his mate. So this is the kind of arbitrary distinction that we're talking about. But, you know, the people that we spoke to for the research, you know, some people thought when they heard the term unpaid work of a homemaker, some people thought of the word slave, some people were thinking, you know, unpaid work is for interns. So there are lots of different definitions, but that kind of basic one of the activity or service that has some kind of market value is the one that is, I think, most people use today.
In a recent piece on the New America website, you argued that, or made the point that unpaid labor is in a lot of ways the foundation of what we traditionally see as our economy. How does that work?
Yeah, absolutely. So at a very basic level, we don't have an economy without a workforce, right? And unpaid work is really what creates and nurtures our workforce. So I work at my job all week, and I'm only able to work at my job because my parents took the time to take care of me when I was a kid. You know, think about a woman with three kids who's an investment banker. She's doing her job because presumably somebody else is taking care of her kids. If she wasn't able to outsource that work, she would be at home taking care of them herself. So this is really the foundation for all economic activity because it's what creates and reproduces the very workforce that we rely on for that activity.
Now, I imagine some people might push back at this concept of unpaid labor as something we need to measure, the sense that, well, we're monetizing something that we do out of love or out of obligation or responsibility to our family, whether that's taking care of a kid or maintaining the household or taking care of an aging relative. Is it still important, despite that we try to put numbers on it?
Yeah, absolutely. And we see that a lot, this kind of pushback, because, you know, people see childcare and elder care as activities that are somehow diminished by quantifying them or by valuing or measuring this work. And kind of what you were getting at, that by valuing it, we're saying that it's drudgery or that we should always outsource it or that we should be seeking only to enter the productive labor market. But, you know, I think I see the goal in measuring it and valuing it to really free men and women, to give them the choice to do it or to not do it. So the point is neither to paint this work as purely a burden or responsibility or to force women or men to do more or less of it, but really valuing it, is really the first step to thinking about how do we actually begin to give women and men the opportunity to choose whether they want to do more unpaid work or more paid work today.
And you're saying women or men. Traditionally, a lot of this has fallen more specifically on women, right? And while things may be changing, as I understand it, they haven't changed to anywhere near a balance yet.
Right, right, absolutely. And just to kind of throw out a few numbers here, women are spending on average globally 4.5 hours a day on unpaid work. And of course, this varies widely by country and region. So, you know, it won't surprise anybody, I don't think, that in India, women are spending far more time on unpaid work than they are in Norway. And in the U.S., you know, they may be spending 4.5 hours on laundry and cooking. And for women in Zimbabwe, she might be spending, you know, more like 8 hours a day on gathering firewood and water for her family. But globally, women do spend at least double the amount of time that men spend on unpaid work, and that's according to the OECD. But, you know, the other interesting part of this, I think, is that this actually starts, this divide starts very early. So there was a study out of the University of Michigan that shows that American girls who are between the ages of 10 to 17 spend 2 hours more than boys on chores every week. And boys are 15% more likely to be paid for their chores. So it is something that is still disproportionately falling to women, and this really just does start at a very early age.
Talking to Elizabeth Weingarten with New America, talking about unpaid labor and the role it plays in the American economy and the global economy. One problem that you write about is how difficult it is to measure how much unpaid labor actually happens, and B, how little effort there's been to measure that unpaid labor. Why haven't we seen much of that?
Yeah, so it's an incredibly complicated thing to measure. In part, you know, what we were talking about before, it's really hard to agree on our definition of unpaid work. So, for instance, should volunteering be measured and compensated as part of unpaid work? Is it unpaid work when I wash my hair because I could technically pay someone else to do it? You know, I think this question of where do we draw the line and how do we measure this labor in a way that's both broad enough to take the diversity of unpaid labor into account, but specific enough so that it doesn't trivialize the biggest parts of what make up this ecosystem, you know, when we talk about kind of childcare and elder care. So that kind of definition part is really stymies, I think, economists and policymakers. The other problem is that one of the key ways that we've seen countries measure this around the world, which is through time use surveys, these are really tricky because, you know, as we all know, a lot of us are doing multiple things at one time. So if you're looking at, you know, if a government kind of puts out a survey that's attempting to measure how people spend their time during the day, say you are a guy and you're a freelancer, you stay at home for most of the day, and you're also taking care of your daughter. So you're writing and your daughter is playing and at the same time. So are you technically doing unpaid work right now? You know, how do you count that? That's another issue that people face when trying to kind of measure and quantify this. And the other piece of this that we were getting at earlier is this political pushback and folks who say that, you know, just by measuring it, we are kind of diminishing the value of this work and the fact that, you know, it's not just drudgery. It's something that is some of the most joyful work that some of us will ever do. So, you know, does putting a number on it, does quantifying it take away from that? So these are all of the components, I think, that make it incredibly complicated to try to measure and value.
Okay, supposing we could and did measure it and have some pretty reliable numbers, what would we start doing with that information?
Yeah, so we do have some, you know, there are some numbers that are floating out there. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention there was a fantastic McKinsey study that was done late last year showing that, you know, if unpaid work were calculated in GDP, its value would be about $10 trillion or, you know, about the size of China's GDP. And, you know, put another way, if women didn't carry most of the responsibility for unpaid work, which can often mean that they have to take part-time jobs or they have to take lower-paying jobs, global GDP would grow by $28 trillion, which is bigger than both the U.S. and Chinese economies combined. So if we were to have, you know, we already have some of those numbers, and we know just how kind of influential unpaid work is at a kind of global economic level. But having some of the more kind of granular numbers can make a huge difference in terms of kind of individual policies and programs that we're developing around the world. So, you know, there are many examples of this, but, you know, if you look at, say, a program developed for job training in a particular part of the world for women, a program like that, if it completely ignores the fact that women are spending 8 hours a day on unpaid work, well, you're going to see really high dropout rates in that job training program. Maybe it's for women, you know, micro entrepreneurs. Just by giving women a childcare stipend, you can completely change the way that they engage with that program and make it actually a good investment. But if you don't have that data, if you don't know how much time people are spending on those activities every day, your program isn't going to be as effective. And just at a very basic level, I think we hear this phrase a lot, what gets measured gets done. And if you're a policymaker, you're looking to data, you're looking to kind of evidence to show you that investing in a particular field or in infrastructure and in a program is the right thing to do. So if you don't know, well, women, you know, in this particular part of the world are spending X amount of time on this labor, how will you know that you should be investing in that as a policymaker?
We're talking to Elizabeth Weingarten with the think tank New America. She's written about the value of unpaid work in the American economy and the global economy, things like caregiving, household work often done by women.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Have you spent a lot of your time doing this kind of unpaid work in your family? Do you think of it as work? Do you think it's undervalued in our society? And what questions do you have for our guest? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're continuing our conversation about the economic impact of unpaid work. Think of family caregiving or household maintenance. Our guest is Elizabeth Weingarten, director of the Global Gender Parity Initiative and senior fellow in the Better Life Lab at New America.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you spent a lot of your life, a lot of your time doing this kind of unpaid labor? Do you think of it as unpaid labor when you do it, when you're taking care of kids or maybe an aging parent or maintaining the house? Do you think we take that kind of work seriously enough? Should we be accounting for it in our economy? Do you think it falls unfairly on women? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Elizabeth, how big an obstacle is this issue of unpaid work and not paying attention to unpaid work for gender parity as you work in the Global Gender Parity Initiative?
Oh, I think it's absolutely huge, and I think it's connected in so many ways to a lot of the other kind of quote unquote gender parity issues that we think about when you think about women's ability to ascend in the workplace, for example, into leadership positions. The fact that we don't adequately count and measure unpaid work is, you know, directly, I think, translates into not having a federal paid leave policy. The fact that we don't have investments in child care, you know, these are the things that often hold women back from the kind of paid labor force, and not only from just the paid labor force, but from those kind of upper echelons of leadership in any industry across the country and the world. So it is deeply connected, I think, to all sorts of different areas where we're seeing gender inequality. Because when you have that inequality at home or kind of in the domestic sphere, that's the type of inequality that doesn't just stay domestic. It seeps out from there, and it impacts all different corners of somebody's life.
Let's go to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Chris is with us in Waukesha. Chris, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What do you want to tell us about, Chris?
Well, I am in my 50s, and I'm recently divorced after almost 30 years of marriage. I was had a very dynamic career when we got married and then stayed home to raise our son because of a lot of moving around with my ex-husband's career. And also cared for elderly parents and when they were getting ill. And when we went through the divorce, the consensus from my husband was that I didn't deserve anything because I never worked outside the home and never made any contribution financially to the household. And so I, of course, never looked upon my work that way. I valued it highly. It may have been because I came into it having worked in a career before I stayed home. I don't know. But when I always took the stance that my work should be valued at the 50-50 contribution just because he was bringing the salary in, didn't change the way I looked at things.
Chris, thank you so much. And I'm sorry for the rough time you had going through that. Elizabeth, I know you're working to collect stories about how unpaid labor has worked out. Here's a case where Chris saying her unpaid labor was unvalued in a very legal sense in this case.
Yeah, you know, and Chris, I am so sorry to hear that. And I think, you know, one of the solution areas that we look towards is, you know, how do we set up a system where you would get some kind of, you know, caregiver credits or, you know, how do we connect care to retirement or Social Security benefits? Because we do see that, you know, people who spend, you know, many years outside of the kind of productive or, you know, paid market are losing out on these, you know, these very real benefits, even though they're contributing in such a substantial way to the economy. So, you know, it's my hope that we see policies in the next few years that that acknowledge the key contribution that you're making as a caregiver to our entire economy, and that allow you to take advantage of some of the benefits that people in the paid economy or the paid market economy have.
Chris, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We're talking to Elizabeth Weingarten from New America about the role of unpaid labor in the economy, American economy and the global economy. Elizabeth, in some of what you've written about this, one of the biggest concerns you have is that nobody's writing about this. Nobody's talking about this, or almost no one. Why is this, do you think, an issue that's largely overlooked?
Yeah, so I think in part because, you know, you say the words unpaid work and people's eyes kind of glaze over. It's not a very exciting concept on its face. I mean, because, you know, when you talk about work, you know, it's not, talking about work isn't that exciting to begin with. I mean, some of us, of course, love our jobs, but just saying, I want to talk to you right now about work. Well, add unpaid work to that, and it's just not the most glamorous concept in the world. And then I think the fact that we all have so many different definitions for it and so many different ways that it affects our lives, it gets really hard to kind of construct a single or meaningful narrative around what it is and kind of what we should think or do about it, which is kind of good and bad. I mean, I think that makes it a really kind of robust and interesting topic. You know, one of the things that we argue in the piece is that unpaid work kind of has a branding problem. You know, not only do people not really know what it is, but people don't really seem to care or seem to connect it to kind of these bigger political, economic, social issues that it is kind of inextricably tied to. So we are actively looking for different ways to talk about it. So I think if any of your listeners have ideas for other ways to talk about unpaid work, just even other words to use, we're all ears for how to do that.
And Elizabeth, that makes me think you're partly looking for policy changes, maybe legal changes, changes in the kind of research that's being done. But fundamentally, this sounds like it would take a cultural change in the way we think about unpaid work or whatever we end up calling it.
Absolutely. I think you hit the nail on the head there, because we really can't have policy change without culture change. And particularly when you talk about some of these issues related to gender equality and gender inequality. And I think kind of a perfect example of that is paid leave. If you look at the companies across the country that have adopted paid leave, or even the cities and states that now have paid leave policies, it only works if people kind of understand and see the value in taking that time. And particularly in companies, if there's been a culture shift to make people think that, oh, if I take paid leave, that, you know, it doesn't mean that my supervisor will think that I'm less committed to the job. But without that culture change, the policy doesn't really do much of anything. So I think you're absolutely right that we do need that kind of cultural change in rethinking how do we value this type of work. And I should say that the president and CEO of New America has been one of the most outspoken and articulate voices on this particular subject. And what she talks about is, you know, there are a lot of different ways that we can value and recognize this work, and it doesn't always have to be attached to money. So just saying to somebody, if you meet them, who says, you know, I'm a caregiver, responding to them and saying that is such important work, or, you know, just in the ways that we talk about this.
And we'll have to leave it there and maybe talk about it more in the future. Thanks to Elizabeth Weingarten with New America. You can find a link to some of her work on the concept of unpaid labor. There's a link at the Central Time Facebook page.